Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Welcome.
I'm Megs.
I'm Hannah.
And today we have a pretty brutal story. I actually listened to True Crime All the Time podcast to get some of the information. On March 30th, 1975, Easter Sunday in Hamilton, Ohio, started as a happy day for the Rupert family. They worshiped together at an early service, then they gathered at 635 Minor Avenue. This should have been a beautiful day, full of family memories, but unfortunately, it went down in history as a family massacre.
Okay. I figured it was going to be rough when you dove straight into it. That's usually...
That's a good indication.
Yeah, that's the ones that are pretty bad.
Yeah. It was one of the deadliest shootings by a lone perpetrator in the state of Ohio. James Urban Rupert was born on March 29th, 1934, and from everything that I read, his upbringing was pretty rough. His mother, Charity, would often call her son a mistake, and she openly told him that she wanted a daughter instead.
Rough.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it's safe to say that a lot of parents might hope for a certain gender, like maybe they want a boy or a girl, but I think everyone I know is always just thrilled to have a healthy baby.
Okay, yeah, so as like someone who is very pregnant,
yeah.
And in a lot of groups on Facebook, I do see that gender disappointment is actually like a huge thing.
Okay.
But typically how it goes down from what I've seen is that, you know, you hope for the other gender and then you're kind of like a little bit resentful. Like, not everybody. Some people just, you know, kind of cried out and then are like, okay, now I'm getting attached this way. But sometimes they'll be resentful through the pregnancy, but then once the baby is placed in their arms, they're like, everything with that disappointment melts entirely away and you don't ever think about it again.
Okay.
So that's actually like really freaking sad.
Yeah. And I mean, this carried on all of his childhood where his mom is saying like, I wish you were a girl.
That is a lot to put on a kid.
Well, and what do you think that does to a child when they're basically told they're the wrong gender?
That's not what you wanted. No.
Yeah. I kind of think you're just doomed. You can never live up to those expectations. So
Right. You're
not going to feel wanted. James had an older brother, and I did not find anything that said that Charity had an issue with her son, Leonard Jr., being a boy.
Well, I suppose maybe it was like she wanted girl boy.
That's what I was wondering, yeah. If it was like, okay, now I got a boy, so I need a girl for
right.
The next one. Sorry, it just doesn't always work that way.
No, it sure does not.
Well, the family lived in a small house that did not have any running water. James was a very sickly child, and he had extreme allergies. His father, Leonard, raised chickens in the back of the house, which only made his asthma worse. He had respiratory reactions to all of the feathers and the dust. According to several articles, James even walked hunched over, and this prohibited him from doing things that the other kids were able to do. He could not play all of the games or the sports like the other kids, and he couldn't help on the farm. You know who could easily play sports and help on the farm? His older brother, Leonard. So maybe James felt kind of inadequate.
I mean, I sure would if I was in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, he's left out of everything, and he sees his brother getting to do everything that a normal kid could do.
Well, and then they're just, like, not giving a shit about the asthma situation, because like most parents would be like, raising chickens with a kid that's having issues with it, probably not the best choice.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. But also, I don't know if maybe he couldn't find something else to do. Like, if that's your source of income,
yeah,
I don't know what you do about that.
I suppose, but it's like, you know, it's your kid, like, figure something out.
Yeah. And I think when he was excluded from everything, you know, you're going to feel kind of like a loner, essentially. James's father, Leonard, was violent, had a bad temper, and just did not have very much time for either of his sons. Leonard died from tuberculosis in 1947 when James was 12 and his brother Leonard Jr. was 14. So they were very young when this happened. At just 14 years old, Leonard Jr. took on the role as head of the family and, according to James, began relentlessly picking on him. After the father had died, James's mother started beating James, and she encouraged Leonard Jr. to beat and torture him as well.
Okay, this is going downhill very quickly.
Yes, this is like a recipe for disaster, and I don't know why they were targeting him so hard. I don't know if it's because the mom maybe thought he appeared weaker because of his asthma and all his other like health issues. I mean, it's really twisted either way.
I feel like some like families that are just not functional kind of have a tendency to target like one kid.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like I've heard stories with that before. Cause you know, like in A Child Called It, like they literally treat him like he is the scum of the earth. And then I think there's like two other kids. And, like, he could literally hear them upstairs.
Yeah.
Doing fun things with the mom and, like, getting to play and living normal lives. And then she encouraged them to go after him. And, I mean, literally, like, locked him in the basement and shit. And he had to listen to it.
That's he a had valid to hear point. Them. Yeah.
So it's, like, it's for some reason they just pick, like, that one kid. And they latch on to just abusing them specifically.
And so if this is true in James's case, I think that it is going to create some really complex issues down the line.
Yeah.
James already feels unwanted by his mother. His father dies and she starts beating him and allowing his older brother to beat him. The sibling rivalry really increased over the years and the boys could not have been more different. When James was 16, he was extremely unhappy at home, and he did attempt to end his life with a sheet, but it did not work. Leonard Jr. excelled in school. He had many friends, earned a degree in electrical engineering, did great in sports, and dated several women. James, on the other hand, did terrible in school, did not have many friends, was always smaller than his brother, barely dated, and flunked out of college after 2 years. So you can see very different paths here. The resentment just kept growing as they got older, and it certainly didn't help things when Leonard Jr. married one of the few girlfriends that James ever had.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it just really complicated things. James was unemployed and living with his mother at age 41. He also owed a bunch of money to his mother and his brother. He had borrowed large sums of money after losing what he had in the stock market crash of 1973 to 1974. His mother, Charity, was fed up. James could not seem to keep a job and he was constantly drinking, so she threatened to evict him. He hated that his mom was trying to push him out. But here's the thing, okay? He is a grown-ass adult. It's her damn house. She can do what she wants. He was not paying any rent, and he owed her money. She was very sick and probably didn't need all of that added stress that he was bringing her.
Right.
So it's like, obviously, I'm not condoning the things that she did when she raised him as a child. But he is an adult and like, sorry, Charlie, if your mom doesn't want you there when you're 41 years old, that's her choice.
It definitely is. I mean, that's like a full adult.
Yes.
Yeah, that's like an adulty adult.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing against it. Like if you're living with your parents
and they're good with it
and they're good with it, everyone's happy with the arrangement. cool.
But when you're like
freeloading.
Yeah.
And causing her a lot of stress.
And not helping. Yeah.
To contribute. I'm not down with it. So things were not going well for James, but his brother Leonard got a really good job at General Electric, and he had 8 children with his wife, who was James's previous girlfriend.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah, yeah, it is. For James, he already felt like that black sheep of the family, right? His brother is the one that has everything, and he has nothing. March 29th was James's birthday, and witnesses later reported seeing him shooting at cans with a .357 Magnum along the banks of the Great Miami River in Hamilton. Later that night, he showed up at the 19th Hole Cocktail Lounge, and he talked to an employee named Wanda Bishop while he had a few drinks. Wanda later recalled that James seemed very depressed, and he talked about how his mother was threatening to evict him. He said that he, quote, needed to solve the problem. He left the bar at 11 p.m., but then later returned. He was asked if he had solved the problem, and he said, no, not yet. He stayed at the bar until it closed at 2:30 a.m. On the morning of Easter Sunday, Leonard and his wife, Alma, brought their 8 children, ages 4 to 17.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This is very, very dark.
The kids are involved?
Yes.
Shit.
Yeah. So they brought them over to see the grandmother at the house on Minor Avenue. Now, what feelings or thoughts, Hannah, come to your mind when you think about going to grandma's house?
Well, I freaking loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that was always a good day for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, like, fun things. Like, now, I mean, like, I'd get bored sometimes, you know, like, but I would be like, grandma's house, like, we get to go do food and all this fun, you know, I get to be with family and whatnot. So, good things.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe you feel probably safety would be one of them.
This is going to be so rough.
Yeah. Happiness, love, food, family, all of those things come to mind when you think about going to grandma's. Well, James stayed upstairs in bed, sleeping off that hangover from the night before. The kids all participated in an Easter egg hunt in the front yard. Then they headed inside to play in the living room while all the adults were preparing lunch. Around 4 p.m., James woke up, loaded his .357 Magnum, 2.22 caliber handguns, and a rifle. Then he headed downstairs. It was Easter Sunday. So, I mean, what do you think he could hear when he came out of his room? Maybe like his nieces and nephews playing and laughing.
Well, if there's that many of them, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure, because I was thinking about when we used to get together with all of the cousins, and it's so loud because everybody is just talking over each other and playing and having fun. So yeah, the family's talking, the food is being cooked. He most likely heard happiness.
I want to move my cat closer because this is going to suck.
This is going to get really bad really fast here.
Rona, come closer. Scoot a little closer to me.
She needs you. You know, and when he came out of his room, he probably smelled the Sloppy Joes, you know, wafting in, because that's what they were having that day.
Oh, and I love Sloppy Joes. Mom really does make the best ones, though.
Mom makes the best of a lot of things.
That's so true.
So
true.
But yes, her Sloppy Joes are bomb. James entered the kitchen, and you guys, here we go. We're there. It's going to get bad.
I tried to drag it out as long as I could.
You did. You did a good job. So James entered the kitchen and shot and killed Leonard, Alma, and Charity. His nephew David and his nieces Teresa and Carol were in the kitchen, and he killed them as well. James rushed to the living room. His niece Anne and his 4 remaining nephews Leonard III, Michael, Thomas, and John were there, and he murdered them. He started with a disabling shot and then finished them all off. It took him less than 5 minutes to complete the massacre. Afterwards, James sat in the house for about 3 hours. He changed his clothes and straightened up before he called the police. And according to True Crime All the Time podcast, he said, "He's dead. She's dead. They're dead." And then he hung up. When the police arrived, he was just waiting inside the front door and he did not struggle at all. The police described the scene as a, quote, slaughterhouse. When they entered the home, they saw 5 bodies in the living room and 6 in the kitchen and dining room. 10 of them had been shot in the head and 1 was shot in the chest. This is going to ruin your day.
It already has.
4-year-old John was wearing blue overalls, lying on the couch, clutching chocolate Easter eggs with the tinfoil partially off. It's about the saddest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Okay.
There was so much blood that it was dripping through the floorboards into the basement. To this day, the stains can still be seen in the wood.
Wow.
Now, the most baffling part of the scene was that the investigators could only find 1 single sign of a possible struggle in the house, and that was a wastebasket that had been tipped over. The police hoped that the path the bullets traveled and the point of entry would determine if the victims tried to dodge the bullets. They counted 31 to 35 spent cartridges, depending on the articles that you're reading. 3 pistols were found in the living room, and a rifle was propped against the refrigerator door in the kitchen. With there being 31 to 35 shots, somehow none of the neighbors heard anything. They did not hear 1 shot, and you have to assume that many of them were home. I mean, they're with their families. It's Easter. The houses are extremely close together, so that just kind of adds to the mystery there for me. It's almost, I don't know how to describe this exactly, but I will post a picture of the neighborhood so that everyone can look at it. But it's like if you had maybe those small townhomes that are actually slightly apart. There's a whole bunch of them in a row. So it's just like, they're yards. I mean, these houses, you could literally reach out to the window and hand something to the next one. That's how close these are. So there were 11 victims and no signs of a struggle. It's hard to understand, like, how that is even possible.
I would say because a lot of them are kids.
Right.
And didn't really know what was happening.
And he went for the adults first.
Correct. And I would assume that the kids were, like, in shock.
Mm-hmm.
And just didn't fully understand what the hell was going down. The neighbors thing is wild, though. I mean, I suppose a lot of people could have also been gone, though, because they're with their families.
They could be, absolutely. It just is very strange that this many shots went off and none of them heard anything.
No, that's true, because I hear a freaking car door from all the way inside my house. I'm like, I heard a car door. What is that? Who is that?
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, the articles didn't say nobody was home on the street. They said nobody heard anything. Right. So it kind of makes me think, like, somebody was there. I don't know. Maybe your guard is down because you're at a family event. Obviously, you're not feeling like your family member is going to come down and shoot everybody.
That's very true.
But there is going to be some conflicting information on this later that we'll get to. But most of the articles, like almost everything that I looked at, said there was no struggle. Nobody heard anything. It was a 5-minute ordeal and done. James told the police when they arrived, quote, "My mother drove me crazy by always combing my hair, talked to me like I was a baby, and tried to make me into a homosexual."
I do. It's so hard because, like, I get like, I don't get it, but I can see why he were to go after his, like, brother and mom. But, like, why did he have to go after the kids?
That, yeah. Okay, so I agree, because obviously I hate saying, like, I understand why he would shoot these two. I don't get that.
But I can see why.
Why he's so angry right. at two of them.
And honestly, even, like, the wife, the ex-girlfriend yeah, of his, Alma. I could see it, mm-hmm. but I just don't know why the kids had to go down as well.
And I just don't know if it's because they were there and he decided that was the day and he had to take out every witness.
Right. That would be what I would guess, or he's just too much anger that but he was just like, screw it all. But
he turns himself in. So the whole thing, like, there's a lot of holes.
Yeah.
But then there is a theory that's going to come up as far as why he might have taken the whole family.
Okay.
And I will just tell you now, it's money related.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, so just keep that in your mind.
Okay.
Now, James Rupert had never done anything to have a police record, okay? So there was nothing on there. And people that knew him said he was a quiet, unassuming man. They said he was the perfect neighbor, and they could not believe that he was capable of something so horrific.
It's always those ones.
Yeah. James Rupert was arrested and charged with 11 counts of aggravated homicide. He absolutely refused to answer any questions. He would not cooperate, and he made it very clear, like right from the jump, that he was planning to use the insanity defense. Prosecutors believed that he planned to plead insanity. Then after being cured, he would be released and he could collect his $300,000 inheritance.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Hamilton Police Chief George McNally said, quote, "We can't seem to find a motive for this. This kind of murder usually has a motive, like sex, greed, or jealousy. We can't find any of those things here. Some aspects of this case just leave us puzzled." The Butler County coroner, Garrett Boone, believed that it was possible that some of the victims had been shot once, then shot again to make sure they were dead. He felt that it was unlikely that 11 people would be shot and killed unless they were held in some sort of way, or were in a position where they could not escape. Like, he just couldn't figure out how it made sense. So he's saying that it doesn't make sense that 11 people were murdered and no one was able to run away or get out of the house. No one fought back. But he thinks James fired a shot at all of the victims that would have, like, injured them or disabled them. Then he went back and shot all of them again to make sure they were actually dead. Now, I did find one article, just one, with conflicting information regarding the family fighting back. Butler County Sheriff's Specialist Mike Grimes was a detective in the summer of 1975, and he spent hours guarding James Rupert in jail and sitting beside him in court. Reports say that James hated his brother and they had a strained relationship, and also his relationship was very difficult with his mother. Then County Prosecutor John F. Holcomb and Mauser prosecuted Rupert in the first trial. Mauser said, quote, "We spent 3 weeks trying the case." He said that one of his duties was to sit at the crime scene and, quote, "inventory every piece of paper, every nook and cranny of that house, and I want to tell you, it was horrifying." He said, "You cannot unsee the bloody house and the struggles of all the children. According to everything else I read, there was no sign of a struggle, but this one article from Journal News said there was an immense struggle." Now, I'm inclined to believe this account, since it's coming from somebody who worked the crime scene. But who knows? Because some of the other police officers in the articles previously are saying, no struggle, we don't understand what's going on here.
Yeah, it's a little confusing, but I also wonder if he, like, worded it incorrectly. Like, the struggle as in, like,
No.
No?
Nope. So here's what he says.
Okay.
I'll warn you, this next part is very graphic.
Okay.
But it paints a picture of what actually could have happened in the house on the day of the massacre. So Mauser explained that one child almost got away and was found near the back door. Quote, in the living room, the children were literally climbing the walls. Their fingernails were broken off in the walls. I can still clearly see it, as clear as I can see my wife's picture here in my office. So. Then it sounds like there is a huge struggle going on. So maybe the kids weren't able to leave the house, but they were scared. They knew something was going on. I don't know.
Yeah, now you're confusing me.
Right. Mauser said he sat in the house and he tried to reconstruct things in his mind. What did the children go through as they were trying to escape? Easter candy from the family celebration was spattered with blood. He also said that he found a book in the upstairs bedroom about how to commit a perfect murder. I'm not sure how this was the only article that I could find with this kind of information. Also, hold on to that for later, because
I don't want to.
Well, how does that not prove premeditation? If he found a book like that.
Oh, that. Okay, yeah.
Are you kidding me right now?
I was like, I don't want to hold on to any of this later.
No, I get it. Mauser said financial documentation taken from the house indicated that James was, quote, floundering in the stock market and his brother refused to give him any more money. That was part of the motive. James was jailed at the Hamilton City Jail for one night after his arrest. Then he was moved to a larger facility. When they brought James to the window, he said, oh, good morning. How are you? Yeah.
And I'm literally just sitting here throwing my arms up right now because I've got nothing.
So Dennis Hard, a now retired lawyer who worked as intern with the Hamilton Police Department, said that James was super perky and smiling, upbeat, really unconcerned. And this is right after the massacre. James asked for the cash in his wallet to be counted to make sure that nobody stole any money from him during his one night stay.
That is not your fucking concern right now. What the hell?
You just murdered your entire family.
Children, babies.
Worried about a little money in your wallet. The trial was held in Hamilton. In the first trial, James admitted to killing his family, but pleaded innocent by reason of insanity, just like he said he was going to do. Prosecutors claimed he killed his family for the money. The estates of his brother and mother were an estimated $300,000. So with the entire family dead, all of the money would go to James, and he clearly had financial issues. The defense claimed that he was going out target shooting. He had the guns loaded for that reason. He was never planning on killing his family that day. They said he was beaten and taunted by his older brother after his father died when he was 12. And I just want to point out, at this time of the murders, he was 41. Like 40 or 40. Yeah, 41. Between the ages of 12 and 41, he wasn't able to come up with another way to handle things.
Right.
He had to resort to murder? I don't know about it. A three-judge panel found James guilty of 11 counts of murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison. The conviction was later overturned by the Ohio Supreme Court on a technicality. James opted to have his case tried by a panel of three judges instead of facing a jury. He was under the belief that all judges had to unanimously agree, but that is not true. A second trial was held in Findlay, Ohio, which was about 125 miles north. This happened because it was decided that James could not get a fair trial in his hometown. It got delayed 2 years while an appeals court and Ohio Supreme Court considered his claim that he was facing double jeopardy. In 1982, it was determined that this was not double jeopardy, and the new trial proceeded. Now, this time, he opted for a jury. Prosecutors had new evidence regarding James's target shooting and his statements at the bar about solving his problem. He had admitted that his mother's expectations were the problem that needed to be solved. Defense attorney Hugh D. Halbrock was convinced that his client was insane, so he actually used his personal money to hire expert psychiatrists from all over the country. He told a psychiatrist that on the day of the murders, he slept most of the day.
Because he was hungover!
Yes, he sure was. In the afternoon, he decided he was just going to go to a shooting range.
That's a lot of fucking guns for a shooting range.
A lot, yes. So on his way out, he comes down the stairs, and his brother asked him about his car. His brother said, "How's the Volkswagen?" He took this as an insult, like his brother was judging him. So he murdered everyone.
I'm not seeing where the insanity is coming from, but okay.
Well, and this is where he's trying to say that this was not premeditation, okay. Of course.
Yeah.
The night before, he literally talked to a bartender about his mom trying to evict him, and he needed to take care of that problem.
And so solve it, yeah.
It's like, what else could that mean when he says that?
Well, considering the situation, not a lot.
Right. And so he is saying, like, no, 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 that's taken out of context. That's not what I meant. And I don't think that he actually provides a exact, you know, statement about here's what it meant when I had that conversation, probably because he could play it off and say, oh, I was drunk, you know. So it's like, okay, he's sitting at the bar and he says, I have a problem that I need to take care of. So what's he referring to? He's going to maybe stop drinking, like his mom asked.
Right.
You know, maybe he's got a problem where he needs to move out. But how is he going to do that? He doesn't have a job or money. So I think it all is pretty clear, but okay. And also, why would he head to the shooting range instead of being with his family on Easter? There was a house full of people. They were making food when he came downstairs. He's not going to eat any of those sloppy joes? That makes no sense to me. A psychiatrist testified that James was lying on the couch for 2 hours after the massacre, trying to decide if he should end his own life. But suicide was a mortal sin, and he decided that it should not be his last act.
Oh my God.
So he decided to call the police instead.
Get the fuck out.
So, like, a family massacre is not a mortal sin? Is what you're saying?
Again, get the fuck out with that.
And this was on Easter of all days.
Right.
Easter.
And babies.
Correct.
Yeah.
Two psychiatrists testified that he suffered from paranoia and delusions of persecution. They both said he was unable to control his actions at the time of the shooting. James was described in an article as a loner. He was intelligent and traveled a lot, and the milkman said he knew both Leonard and James, and James was known as the quiet one. One neighbor said that when the two of them were 10 and 12 years old after their father died, their mother would talk about how her sons were just never allowed to be children. They were forced to grow up, be responsible, and become the men of the house at a very early age. Defense psychiatrists testified that James was obsessed with the belief that family members, the police, and the FBI were involved in a long-standing conspiracy to persecute him.
Okay. This whole episode, I've just been sitting here shaking my head and throwing my arms up every 2 seconds.
It's very confusing. Dr. Philip Mihanek mentioned that, quote, his ability to evaluate is impaired. His view of others is warped. He sees virtually no one in a kind light. Harvard psychiatrist Dr. Lester Grinspoon testified that his deadly reaction may have been uncontrollable. Quote, his ego was just completely overwhelmed by this rage, this suppressed rage, which had been accumulating over some 10 years or more, actually since childhood, that there was no way in which he could avoid doing the act. In fact, if there had been more people in the house, they might have been killed also. The prosecution called 29 witnesses and presented 200 exhibits to attempt to show that James wasn't a victim of self-delusion. He had carefully formulated a plan to kill his entire family to collect that inheritance. They argued that he turned himself in with the idea of entering a plea of not guilty by reason of temporary insanity. He knew he would go to a state hospital eventually, and then he would be declared sane, and then he could collect the $300,000 once he was released. Under Ohio law, James Rupert could not inherit his victim's estate if he was found guilty of murder. But if he was declared innocent by reason of insanity, he gets everything.
I don't think he should get it either way.
No.
Like, no. No. Yeah, absolutely not.
It doesn't really seem right, you know, and he was the sole heir of his brother's life insurance, his mother's estate, and half of the property of his brother's children.
Yeah, no. Even if he was declared, like, not sane, I would still say, no, that is not how that should work.
No, in my mind, I don't understand it either.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me. Leonard's home was valued at $40,000. Property belonging to Leonard's family was $19,500, and his mother's house was $14,000. Leonard's life insurance at General Electric was $62,000, and he had his own personal policy for $100,000. He also was investing in savings bonds, stocks, and mutual funds. His family held savings accounts that equaled almost $30,000. The defense tried to show that James acted spontaneously. This was not premeditated. Two psychiatrists and a psychologist testified that he was aware of what he was doing. He knew right from wrong at the time of the murders, and he had the ability to resist those aggressive impulses. James felt like a failure, and he saw his brother as a success. He remembered his brother locking him in closets, tying him up with a rope, beating him with a hose, and sitting on his head when they were younger. In 1965, the Hamilton Police Department determined that James made an obscene call to an employee of the local public library where he spent a lot of time at. He began to believe that his mother and brother reported the call to the FBI to discredit him, and he also believed that the FBI was tapping his phone at home and in the restaurants and bars that he was going to. In 1975, he told psychiatrists that he was being followed by the State Highway Patrol, local sheriffs, private detectives, and the Hamilton police. So, I'm obviously not, like, a doctor here. However, I think this kind of tells us he was severely paranoid.
Very paranoid.
I mean, to think that the FBI is actually tracing your calls at a bar or a restaurant, like, not even in your own home. You're so important to them that they're tracing you when you're out. Like, okay, something is happening here. He believed that everybody was against him. They were sabotaging him. This FBI thing went on for years with him believing they were tracking him. So this was like a long time prior to the massacre. James collected guns and would often walk alone along the banks of the river, shooting tin cans on the ground. A gun store employee said that a month or two before the murders, James asked where he could get a silencer.
Okay, come on.
I mean, if that's true, sounds like premeditation, because why do you need a silencer when you're shooting tin cans?
Right.
You don't. Saying he had a problem, to me, also seems like premeditation. He said he needed to take care of it. His mother told him that if he could drink 7 days a week, 7 days a week, he could also pay rent.
That is a very valid point.
I mean, I agree with her.
Like, so valid.
Yeah. And if not, then she said, you need to find somewhere else to live. His mother was ill, and she could not take care of him anymore. According to psychiatrists at the trial, James believed that his brother had been trying for several months to sabotage his Volkswagen. He was convinced that Leonard had gotten into the crankcase, destroyed the carburetor and the distributor, sabotaged the windshield wipers, loosened the bumper, and had blown holes in the muffler. So, during his story, he's saying that when he came down the stairs on Easter and his brother asked him about the Volkswagen, he felt like his brother was mocking him, like, this is proof that Leonard really was sabotaging the car like he thought.
I mean, it just sounds like severe paranoia.
Yes, I agree. The jury deliberated, and James was found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder, and that was for his mother and his brother. He was found not guilty for the other 9 counts by reason of insanity. This is very confusing to me, okay? The death penalty had been suspended in the U.S. between 1972 and 1976, so James could not be sentenced to death for the crimes. So he was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms, and his attorney attempted to appeal, citing a judicial error, but the motion was denied. So, let's break it down. James was guilty of killing his mother and his brother. He was sane for that part. Then he was insane when he carried out the other 9 murders.
But if it all happened within 5 fucking minutes.
Right. Yeah. And does that mean that he only had the intention to kill his brother and his mom when he woke up? Is that why he was sane for just those 2? Because if they're saying he had an undiagnosed mental illness, how was that not present for the first 2 murders? It's just confusing. I don't.
It is. And in that case, why wouldn't you have chosen a day that there wasn't 8 children in the house?
Right. Yeah. If you only had the intent of killing, you know, his brother and his mother. Yes. Why on Easter when everybody else is gathered there? I don't know. Something seems weird there. Edna Algier was the mother of one of the victims, Alma Rupert. So this was James's previous girlfriend, whom his brother ended up marrying. On the day of the verdict in 1982, she said, quote, I sometimes think I'd like to string him up on the cross like Christ and cut a little piece off at a time. I'd want him to bleed slowly. But if you put that in the paper, people will wonder what kind of Catholic I am. Edna said that James Rupert was actually responsible for 13 deaths. Not 11. 3 years after the massacre, her husband shot himself in the head at 4 a.m. on Easter Day.
No!
Yes.
Okay, so who's the 13th?
During the trial in 1982, one of the jurors collapsed from a heart attack and died.
Stop it!
So could be completely unrelated, but maybe it was the stress of the trial.
This is wild.
Yeah. Edna believes that it was the pictures that got to this juror. Edna feels that James was wildly jealous of his brother for marrying Alma. She was the only victim that was shot 1 time, and it was through the heart. All the other victims were shot in the head. So what do you think that could mean?
Dude, I just have to keep reaching over and petting my cat through this.
I know, because this one's so brutal.
He's getting me through.
Yeah. It just, to me, almost seems like maybe the mother and the brother were not the actual intended victims. Maybe it was the jealousy that his brother married Alma.
I mean, I definitely feel like that's part of it.
Because why would she be the only one that's shot in the chest?
I guess I don't know who was shot first either.
I don't know precisely, because I know it was three of the adults. Like, he went into the kitchen, and that's where he shot his older brother, his mother, and his brother's wife.
Yeah, I...
But, I mean, he could have just been intending to kill everybody, but maybe his rage towards her is different.
Right.
I don't know.
No, that's possible.
In 2015, the Allen Oakwood Correctional Institution Parole Board released a statement. Quote, "The board has determined that the inmate is not suitable for release at this time. The inmate has not completed any recommended programming and does not appear willing to do so. The inmate's record notes negative institutional conduct. The inmate took the lives of multiple victims. There has been strong community objections to his release. The release of this inmate would not be in the best interest of justice." James Rupert died at Franklin Medical Center in Columbus due to natural causes when he was 88 years old. Here are the people that lost their lives during the Easter Sunday massacre. I do want to make sure we name everybody here. Charity Rupert, age 65. Leonard Rupert Jr., 42. Alma Rupert, 38. Leonard Rupert III, 17. Michael Rupert, 16. Thomas Rupert, 15. Carol Rupert, 13. Anne Rupert, 12. David Rupert, 11. Teresa Rupert, 9. And John Rupert, 4. The 11 victims were buried in the Arlington Memorial Gardens in Cincinnati. A year later, the house on Minor Avenue was opened to the public, and all the contents were sold at auction.
Oh my God.
I know. I thought that was a weird choice, too. The home was cleaned, but the bloodstains are still there.
You can't clean that energy out, dude.
No, and they just kind of placed carpet over the top.
Oh!
I guess.
God!
And then it was rented to a family that was new to the area and didn't know the history of the house.
I was just going to say, what if they didn't know when they tore the carpet up because they were remodeling and then they find that and then, oh my God.
Well, it says that they actually moved out really fast. And the family said they could hear voices and strange noises. The lights turned on and off, doors slammed, and they could hear heavy footsteps on the stairs. Several families moved in and then quickly vacated the home. All allegedly reported the same events. There wasn't a lot on this, though, so I don't know the validity of the claims.
Either way, that house is going to have energy in it.
You would think that, yeah.
There's no way it doesn't. That's a lot of people and really in losing their lives in really tragic ways.
But see, the interesting thing, too, so the house ended up being abandoned for several years. And then as of 2014, a family moved into the home and, like, have children that they're raising there. And they said they do not find anything creepy about it and there has never been unusual activity.
I mean, maybe that was, like, the accepted family, I guess.
Sure. Or maybe it's a family that just flat doesn't believe in that kind of thing. And so then you're not going to be opening your mind to the possibility.
And they just ignore it, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you think that there's a reason for every noise you hear. Blame it on the cat. I don't know.
I do that until the cat is next to me, and then I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I know. I can't blame you anymore.
And if he's looking in the same direction as me, then I'm like, oh, shit.
It's real. Yeah. Yeah, so that is the story of James Rupert.
Yeah, I don't even want to, like, I just want this one washed out of my brain.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got it.
That was pretty rough.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to, like, go bleach my brain now.
Okay. Well, then we're going to have to end this one so Hannah can bleach her brain. And I'm going to watch. All right. So make sure to follow us on any of your podcast apps. Tell us the stories you want to hear. Like us on Facebook, X, Instagram. Leave us a 5-star review. If you love us, tell your friends, tell your cats. Bye.